You are now tuned in to the Tuesdays of Culture podcast. Sit back, relax, unwind to the soothing sounds of Anthony Capelli and Seamus Clancy. Sit back and show your love. What time is it? It's Moultrie time. What time is it? It's Moultrie time. Take it away, boys.
And welcome back to a draft edition of Tuesdays with Moultrie. We're going to do one before the draft and one after the draft, just like last year. We've been slacking on the updates, but we're back. I'm Anthony Capelli, alongside Seamus Clancy, as always. How you doing, man?
Doing good. We just got recording this at night, so I guess technically, by the time everyone wakes up, we have two more days until the draft. And this is the biggest draft of all time for the Sixers.
Yes.
Just like it was the last 2 years. Every year is the biggest year in the history of the Sixers at draft time.
Yeah, it's exponentially becoming more and more important each year. Are you sleeping well? How's your health been?
Not great. I think for the last few weeks, I started a new job, part-time job a few weeks ago where I have to actually like get up at 6:45. And like my sleep schedule is just really messed up. So like I'll go to bed at like 1:30, just like watching Draft Express videos and like trying to blog and on Twitter and stupid stuff like that. And then I'll go to like work and just be on Twitter the whole day, like blogging at this job where I'm supposed to be doing other stuff.
Yeah.
I'm just hiding from my boss in the cubicle. And then I go home and I just take a nap for like 2 hours, like power nap, recharge, eat dinner, and then just hop back on the computer. Just like no contact with anyone else, just on Twitter and just refreshing Chad Ford's feed and Woj's feed. Like I need draft rumors to sustain my livelihood.
Chad Ford doesn't look good right now, as we saw him in the most recent.
Dude, it's getting. I feel like I've never seen him like this before.
Yeah,
I've seen him on TV.
Saw him in the Kristaps documentary
and the Kristaps Grantland
video.
Oh,
that was bad.
And he's balding a lot this year.
Yep.
He hasn't shaved and maybe thrown a couple pounds on.
Yeah, he's not doing too good at all.
He lives in Hawaii. Just go out in the sun once in a while, dude. You can just go on your tablet out on the beach, I think, and you'll be fine.
he has a lot of options available to him. A lot of good fruits in Hawaii, a lot of sun, but he's pale as a ghost. Hairline way far back, and I don't think that's old age. That's stress, hair loss, and then he eyes bloodshot red. That man needs sleep. And I probably need sleep as well, but I don't think I'm sleeping. It's a little past midnight on it's now Tuesday right now, and I think this might be it. I think I'm just gonna stay up until Thursday.
No, we're not even exaggerating about Chad Ford. He actually looks kind of bad. I kind of feel bad for
yeah,
him.
No, like it's actually not a joke. It's definitely of concern. If any of Chad Ford's family members are listening, yeah, please reach out and lend a helping hand while you can. I wonder how Woj, like we don't see Woj. I wonder how he looks.
Woj isn't human though, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Wait, I just realized this. What, you know what the time difference is to Hawaii? Have you ever been there?
Oh, yeah. I think I've been to Hawaii for my dad's work years back. I think it's seven. I think it's seven.
Yeah, I'm thinking like when he posted that Sarge thing this morning, it was 9 o'clock here. So he's or like 8:39. So he's just like cramming the night before. Like he's talking. It's like so it would have been like in the afternoon in Turkey, and it's like
is he in Hawaii?
In the morning.
Is he in Hawaii currently though?
I feel like is it like My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy where like Connie just like got to Hawaii and just like zoned out of everything for like a month and recorded the album? Is Chad Ford like that? Where is he in Bristol, do you think?
He's the opposite of Kanye. Year-round, he's in Hawaii. And then he goes to, like... Yeah, because he's been on SportsCenter, so he can't be in Hawaii.
Yeah, but is he on SportsCenter via telecast, or is he in the studio?
No, he's in the studio.
Oh, because he tweets every day, like, coming up in 5 minutes on SportsCenter, talking D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, coming up in 5 minutes, talking Montrezl Harrell on SportsCenter. Like, that's when you know he's been on too many times.
He's on SportsCenter every hour talking about a new prospect.
I'm glad we got that out of the way.
Yeah.
That was a PSA. That was a Tuesdays with Moultrie PSA for Chad Ford's health.
And everyone out there.
Yeah. In other news, I'm doing the podcast in my boxers. That's the leisure of podcasting and not, you know, being doing video. So it's a boxer pod. I don't want to segue this into a what are you wearing question, but if you're also in your boxers, that's okay. You can let it be known.
I'm wearing Celtics shorts, actually. I feel like Jason Terry whenever he'd play his opponent, and he would wear the other team's shorts before they would play every game. This is just sort of like a revenge on the Celtics.
Real? Does he own that many shorts?
Yeah. Well, it's been like he's been in the league for like 15 years at least, so... I remember this before. This was like 10 years ago, the first time the Mavs were in the finals. They were talking about it on air, and obviously he's been in the league a while, and if he didn't have one, he would ask like one of his boys on the other team to hook him up with a pair or something. Damn. Like that.
I want to start exploring the NBA jersey market, NBA short market, I mean, because you know, I have a ton of jerseys. I've been doing that. I want to start wearing some NBA shorts.
It's a buyer's market, I think.
Yeah, it is for sure. It is for
And
sure.
I actually think they are creeping back because Mitchell Ness now is making like those retro, like sort of the way Champion shorts used to be. They're making those now. They have like the old school pinstriped Raptor shorts. They're probably like $85, but still.
I'm going to need those 95 Magic shorts for sure. Those are probably pretty flames. Speaking of flames... This new Chad Ford mock draft, back to Chad Ford, has Kristaps Porzingis going third. I mean, it's about a couple days old now, maybe a week. I'm losing track of time here, but the city would likely go up in flames if that were to happen. However, I think the pick itself would be flames. I'm not saying it's who I'd pick, but I do... really love myself some Taps. And we've both loved him for a while.
Yeah, I'm high on Taps. If I had to rank everyone for the Sixers, I'd rank him fourth. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, because I'd probably put him, Hezonja, and D'Angelo Russell all in a similar tier, whereas I'd probably rank them, you know, different ways. But if Hinkie and the Sixers took any one of them, I wouldn't be upset. I'd be pretty happy. Also because I think they have some other chances to move around and maybe, hopefully, acquire two of those three guys if it's possible and they pull their assets together. You know, I think it's fun because we were so in on Russell earlier. This is, you know, like November, December.
It was once, crazy.
You know, college basketball really got into the conference season. He started tearing up the Big Ten. I remember, I think it was like a weeknight game. It must have been closer to winter break because I remember being home and not at school. And they were playing Minnesota, I believe. And he just tore him up in the first half. I'm like, who is this guy? And I'm on Draft Express. And this guy's going in, I don't know, the teens or, you know, late teens, early 20s, whatever it was. I don't know. And I'm just like, this guy, this is the guy for the Heat pick. This is the guy for the Heat pick. We're going to get Stanley Johnson at three. We're going to get this guy with the Heat pick.
Yeah.
And obviously, in the months since, things changed a lot. And, you know, I think I retweeted at one point maybe in – you know, just a few weeks later in January, early February. I'm so upset the Sixers can't get, you know, D'Angelo at the Heat pick. I think he's going to go right in between where the Sixers land and the Heat pick land.
And then we did get an extra pick right there between our – I mean, where we thought we did. We got the Lakers.
The Lakers pick should have been the D'Angelo pick, but obviously it didn't work out like that. And also D'Angelo's stock just kept rising and rising.
Yeah, it was funny because last year the first guy that I zoned in on was Rodney Hood to be the Pelicans pick. And then as the year went on and on, I mean, I liked him less and less. Everyone liked him less and less. And he ended up having a really good rookie season for the Jazz. Yeah. But throughout the draft process, he
dropped
slid.
What, 23?
Yeah, he dropped really far till when he wasn't even crossing my mind around draft time. And D'Angelo went the other way. There was probably a month period where I thought he was the Heat pick guy, and then... Then it got to the point of talking about trading up for him, and then it finally hit the point where we were some of the first to say, "It's like, are we sure he's not a top three pick?" And then, behold, he was. He's in the conversation.
We were convincing ourselves that he would play next to MCW because of how
yeah,
you know, nice. He can play off the ball because of his shot and different things like that. But I think he became more convinced as we saw him, like, this is the guy that needs the ball in his hands. Look at the way he's passing and his court vision. Like, MTW doesn't have that. You know, he's a nice guy, but he just doesn't have that it factor.
He means well.
With his yeah. And then obviously when they trade him, it got even more amplified. Like, okay, they need to go get D'Angelo. And I've cooled on that a little bit with, like, all out D'Angelo.
Yeah.
Because I think Towns is a superior prospect, even though they won't be in a position to get him. And I like Hezonja a lot. I like Porzingis a lot. So there are a lot of scenarios where I'm going to go home Thursday upset.
Yeah, I don't think anyone listening to this podcast would be in this boat, but the Russell or bus philosophy in the city has been really annoying. I mean, on talk radio and
but I kind of like it.
Even through some people
time,
I've talked to.
I kind of want some, like, we love the, like, you know, like the disconnect we have between us and Twitter and the blogs, and then we have, you know, the mainstream media and the local talk radio. Like, that's fun a lot. But at a certain point, it gets annoying. I want there to be sort of a unifying player.
Yeah.
In the city. And Wiggins was what people presumed it would be last year, I think, because I think more people were on the page. And obviously that didn't work out. Maybe the way we expected it, not that it didn't work out in general.
Yeah.
And I think D'Angelo could really be that guy. Maybe he doesn't, you know, hit the ceiling as much as other guys do eventually, even though I think I do have confidence that he can be a superstar of a player. But I think, you know, his style, his persona, and especially his game, you know, are something that, you know, both stat heads and internet people like us, as well as, you know, the casual fan calling on the radio, your dad, your cousin, you know, your friends in real life, they can you know, get behind. And you could everyone can have – he's the guy that everyone in the city is asking for his jersey for Christmas or something along those lines. The first real player to have that in the city, I think. You know, obviously since Iverson for basketball, but also maybe not since, you know, a Dawkins or McNabb with the Eagles to have a player like that.
Yeah, and you know, we've talked before, he'll probably be the type to get his own shoe deal, and that is something that we haven't had for a while. You know, a player that that, you know, the whole fan base could connect on, or a Sixers move in recent years that everyone agreed on.
Just like at Steph Curry, his shoes suck, and the resale prices in Golden State right now are outrageous. They were selling out of every store, and they're Under Armour. They're not that nice.
Yeah.
Imagine if, you know, Voodoo trademarked.
Yeah, if the shoes get named Voodoo, we get royalties for that, right?
We get, like, it's going to end up like Iverson. We're all his friends. This has actually happened with Iverson. One of his friends – I read the Iverson book that came out earlier this month. I think one of his friends came up with the name for the shoe or something.
Yeah.
And he was supposed to get royalties for it, and he never did. And this is, like, one of his, like, close friends growing up. And then he sued them later on. So, like, that's obviously part of the problems he had that led to his downfall. But that could also be us. Hopefully that's us.
Yeah, hopefully that's us.
Or we can just join his entourage or something.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think that'd be really awesome. But I mean, my main point that I was trying to make was, I don't think there's any reason to not believe that, you know, the front office is gonna look at every single player, every single angle and edge that they can find, whether it be, you know, physical measurements or statistical regressions or a ton of tape, high school tape, all the overseas trips that they had, a ton of different opinions. And I think we're lucky to have a front office, not like the – I mean, you hear reports out of the Knicks that, oh, they like Porzingis, but they want to take him because they can't because of the fan base in New York. And you just feel comfortable knowing that you have – a front office that's open to all options and is going to look at every player as a unique person, original person, and not, you know, see Chris Porzingis and get scared of previous years come before him that he might not have had anything in common with. And I think that's really, really cool. And I do think I'm at the point where I've been down a ton of paths. I think Russell will be my pick. I think he will be the pick. But I don't think anyone should be upset if it's someone else. I mean, if it's Willie Cauley-Stein, then yeah, I could see why you'd be upset.
He's sort of off the board for the Sixers because of I could see him being one of the, you know, four or five best players in the draft eventually.
Yeah, but no, it's not against him. I'm just saying
it's basically a duplicate of Noel's. I'm just saying for in general because I do like him a lot. I would take him in the top 10, but not the Sixers.
Yeah. yeah, you know, shoot for a star. So if you know, if we had a front office that wanted to quote unquote play it safe, which I don't think you can do with any draft pick ever, if you want to play it safe and like, oh, let's take Justice Winslow, like that, then I would actually speak out against Sam Hinkie, I think. But I think Russell, Porzingis, even Moutier, I think all those guys have star potential. You feel different about Moutier than I do, but I would be thrilled with any of those guys. And I could talk myself into Okafor, maybe. Really not a fan of Jahlil Okafor, but he's a person I could at least like talk myself into. But
and I think over the last few weeks when you saw stuff with Chad Ford saying how, oh, so and so, you know, Western Conference executive or Eastern Conference scout said, you know, Porzingis might be the best player in this draft, but I don't think I would have the confidence to take him. If you're thinking that, like, what are you in this league for? Like, if that was my, you know, if I worked for that team or if that was my, you know, favorite team's, you know, GM or I was a beat writer for that team, I would call that guy out and be like, are you serious? You're not taking the best player just because you're scared of failure? If you're scared of failure in the NBA, you're definitely going to fail.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't.
Nobody wins playing it safe in the NBA. It's just not the way it works. And, you know, I think there's a difference between what we talk about a lot with you need to build a superstar, you know, contending team, and that's what sort of we think the Sixers are doing. There's a difference between that and just having, you know, a competitive, fun team, which, you know, a casual fan can enjoy. And I understand that perspective. But to think that you're evaluating a guy as a better prospect and you think he'll be a better player, but you won't take him because of the backlash you'll take is absurd. Do you know what, you know, gives you good PR? Good players. If he's good, take him. If not, don't take him. It's that simple.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I don't understand getting mad or happy with the pick. I mean, if you like a certain player, you can be excited or whatever, disappointed, but like being like, oh, I'm done if they pick this person. Like, you know, like,
let
it play out
and it works out in 3 years, we're going to have a lot of, you know, searched for old retweets of,
oh yeah,
the Sixers take Porzingis, I'm going to kill myself. Like, no, I'm not even kidding. You could search that on Twitter. And you'll find
part of me loving, part of my Chris Tapps high from a few weeks ago, which is just honestly seeing what people would do. I think that would have been so
funny. Obviously, I like to get a little hyperbolic with that, with the European prospects. Besides just liking the games, a lot of these players, I like to play sort of that role a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's our guy. Like, that is our guy. Our guys being the Euro hyper on Twitter, which I'm fine with. But
it's actually kind of funny. I think more people came around on Dario than I thought we were going to. Like, I said
that's all
like
you, right there.
Sarcastic comments to Max whenever he posts like a, you know, box score or just like a Dario stat line from a game. I'm always like, he always posts like the per 36 minute numbers, and I always say like, if he was that good, why isn't he playing 36 per minutes per game or something like that, just joking around? And I look in the actual replies, and everyone's like, oh, that's awesome. And I'm just like, oh, okay, well, I'm a straw man now. No one's actually upset about him.
Yeah.
Maybe if he takes 3 years to come to Philly, people will start getting upset. But for now, he's
for safe. Now, we're chilling. Yeah, if you want to play it safe and, you know, take all the safe picks, you're going to be the Orlando Magic, right? And you look at their team.
I could see them taking Chris Stapps. I could see them taking Hezonja.
If they take Kristaps or hell, even, I mean, I guess it's how you grade your prospects, but even if they go the Moutier route, which isn't a fit for them at all because they have no shooting, I would like to see them go for a star. They don't have any on their roster.
I think they're going to go for Kristaps or Hezonja if they stay at that pick.
If they take Justice Winslow at five, I couldn't be any more disappointed in them. I mean, I'll be happy, but that team's just
you know, I agree with you there because I think it's just a lot of
they're really capping
pieces.
Off,
maybe
think,
they're a little bit more tangible than the ones the Sixers have, but have they made a lot of bad? I guess like the trade with Dario was not the best trade because they sort of got, you know, hooked there by the Sixers, and you know, Hinkie pulled one on them a little bit.
I also thought the Aaron Gordon pick was bad.
Really? I liked Aaron. Did you like Vonleh better? Is that what it was? Because I don't know.
No, I mean, I liked Dante Exum better.
But he wasn't there.
No,
Did the Magic have the fourth pick or the fifth pick?
Magic had four. Dante.
Oh
five.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now I do remember. We wanted them to take Exum and have the Exum. Oh yeah. Okay. I'll agree with you there because down the points irrelevant. I was just saying I don't think they took too many players that they shouldn't have. But yeah, Exum was a guy they should have taken.
And I mean, neither had a great rookie year.
Yeah, Oladipo was a really good pick, I think, in 2013 in a bad draft class. Probably a top three guy in that draft, I guess, with Noel and Giannis.
Well, Gobert, I think, would be number one.
Oh, Gobert, yeah. I think I knocked down Oladipo to four. Gobert is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that weird draft. Really, really weird draft.
You go Gobert or Noel, knowing Gobert is a year older than him. I think I forgot about this today. I said on Twitter
I'm back and forth on this all the time.
Yeah, I forgot that Gobert was in that draft, so I think I'm going to pull back on that and say Gobert would go number one. I think I would take Gobert over Noel as much as I do like Noel.
Yeah, I think I'm it's weird. The thing that still intrigues me is Noel's I think Gobert might be a slightly better, you know, shot blocker, but Noel's
versatile.
Definitely. Yeah. The versatility of Noel, like those steals, those pokeaways, those disrupting guards and forwards and switches.
Yeah, I think he could get out on the perimeter a little bit more. Maybe not
that.
The way Cauley Stein can, but he's better than Gobert.
Yeah, I want to say, I saw him play defense on I think it was Chris Paul one game, and it was insane. I want to see him. I want to see that grow and develop more to where he become just like some defensive versatile monster. And I think at their ceiling, they're both going to be really fun to watch. So I think it's actually pretty close. Right now, I think I would take Gobert, but I think it's close. And then,
I'll go Gobert, Noel, Giannis, Oladipo.
Then Oladipo, yeah. So that's that. And then, but yeah, so. I also don't want to make it sound like I hate Winslow or Cauley Stein. I just think I think two things. I think with those two guys, one, I think people are going to be upset at their lack of offensive contributions their first couple of years. I think I think they're both more of projects than people think.
Yeah, they're immediate contributors on D, but yeah, I agree with what you're saying.
When I saw Winslow, I don't really see a great like too many great offensive moves. He has the Euro step in transition, which is fun, but I don't see a lot of great moves to get into the basket. I also, I know he shot 40% from three, but as we talk about, free throw shooting is the best indicator of NBA 3-point shooting, and he shot like 56% from free throws, which is terrible. His form doesn't look good to me at all.
Get the work of Brett Brown.
Yeah, but 100%. I don't know as much about Cauley Stein just because of the fit, but and I know we're not going for fit here, but I mean that'd be kind of a disaster. But
well, it's different.
Winslow,
like, you go for best player available unless that player isn't better than one of the players.
Yeah,
that we have.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
That's the case with Noel.
Well, I think Winslow is a great trade up target if they get back on the top 10. I would prefer Hezonja.
If they were to grab,
I prefer Hezonja, but I think Winslow
Russell,
would be great there.
Or Zingas, and then they could grab him with. You know, maybe a trade with the Nuggets, Pistons, Kings, any of those guys. That's a really, I mean, that's a close to a perfect draft, I think.
Yeah. Wait, yo. So one more question that I propose to you on the subject of Kristaps. Would you rather Sixers draft Russell? He busts hard, which I think is a possibility. I think he's a more boomer bust pick, as Derek Bodner talks about and ESPN talks about. But I also think he has tremendous superstar potential as well. Okay, but would you rather Sixers take Russell and he busts hard? And then Kristaps goes to the Knicks and becomes a generational star, perennial all-star. Or the Sixers take Porzingis, he becomes a star. The Knicks take Russell and he busts. What do you prefer? Now, it sounds easy. But I want
but
you to really
think. As a cynical
about
person,
it.
Do I want to shade and fraud?
What is the Euro troll in you want to say?
Yeah, the Euro troll in me wants to be on Twitter in like 2025 saying, "I told you about Porzingis. You guys said stuff." And he's right.
glad you guys had fun with you guys got your guy.
Yeah, I'll find out all those tweets of the Sixers get Porzingis, I'm out. Like Kramer, I'm out or something. But yeah. At the same time, I think just give the Sixers a star, and I don't care if it's friggin' some guy from Madagascar or something. I don't know.
Yeah, get the Sixers a star. That's what I want more than anything.
Was Levin prophetic about Blark?
I think so. I was thinking that recently. The closest thing to Blark possible. Isn't he? The report said today he's like 7'4 with shoes on. That's absurd.
Yeah, he was 7'1 and a quarter without shoes. So I'm guessing he's 7'2, 7'3.
Jeez, man.
Oh, my God. I thought he was 7'1 with shoes.
Yeah.
That's pretty absurd.
Apparently, he was barefoot in all of the other workouts and measurements.
And he was 230 without shoes, which is a little bit better than I expected. And also, you have to kind of worry because it's the impact testing, and I think he sort of had an agreement there, so I don't know if those numbers...
230 without shoes, 260 with shoes on.
So, yeah, he's just wearing Timberlands. He's
balling in Tims.
He actually has the first Timberland signature shoe. The Air Zinger, the workman shoe.
The Air Zinger.
Your uncle wears them when he goes to do construction work.
Some weird Lafayette industrial strength work boots. I would be all in on those. But so what is your thoughts on explain to the listeners your feelings towards one Emmanuel Mudiay?
I think part of it is he just hasn't had a lot of time to showcase his skills. And I think a lot of the scouting reports, you know, talking about how good of a player he is are essentially, you know, a year and a half to 2-year-old reports about how he played, you know, an ex-All-Star game in 2013 or 2014, which is fine because a lot of the players we eventually do talk about now or do talk about in draft time really did excel at those moments. Yeah. But, you know, I try to watch, you know, the majority of his games and his, you know, playing time in China. And, you know, the counting stats look good. You know, and I think Derek Bonner did a nice breakdown of this, you know, on his Philly Mag profile. And it said something where, you know, this is a small sample size, but over the course of those, you know, All-Star games and big high score tournaments, it was something around 81 free throws, and he was still – like a sub 60, maybe even a sub 55% free throw shooter.
Yeah.
And that's like you huge. Talked about earlier, while he was a 34% shooter, I think, in China, that was only in, 12 games, I believe?
Yeah.
Is that how many he played? And that I don't think that was all of attempts, maybe 30 or 40. So that's scary. And like you said, and it's a thing Kevin Pelton has been pushing a lot, you know, this draft cycle is that, you know, free throw shooting is ultimately a better indicator of potential 3-point proficiency because, you know, it's more, you know, it takes less. I think I agree with it. If you look at it besides a statistical perspective, is that, you know, it takes a lot of context out of that. Is he getting off, you know, off balance shots? Is he being asked to do too much? Is he forcing it? This is just really simply his form and is he a good shooter?
Yeah. And like when you look at Winslow.
And we're not getting that with Mudiay in the small town we've seen, but that's a problem that dates back to his high school days.
Yeah, exactly. When you look at Winslow, a lot of his shots, he was, you know, playing some zone defenses or he was, you know, left wide open. And I mean, and the 3-point line shorter as well. But when you look at him shooting free throws, the form looks, you know, pretty bad to me. And I think Mudiay,
you know, I think he can be fantastic getting into the paint.
Yeah.
And, you know, sort of either collapsing the defense and kicking the ball out to someone in the corner. A lot of those times you'd rather him just, you know, go into the paint, get to the rim and get fouled and get to the line. Sort of a, you know, while his game's not modeled off like, you know, James Harden type player or John Wall type player, if he's, you know, has the athleticism to get to, and the strength to get to the paint like that, because he is, you know, pretty muscular and built, you know, those are supposed to be easy points when he gets to the free throw line.
Yeah.
But if he's only making, you know, every other free throw, you know, that's not that great. You know, it's sort of a waste of that. It's a sort of a waste of that ability to get there. And I think you don't want to be looking at a player that's, you know, you don't want to be sitting there in 3 years, you know, saying some of the similar, some of the things we've said, you know, about MCW for a year and a half, where you don't want to end up having to, you know, turn him into Tony Allen, where he's, you know, has a size and he'll be a really good wing defender, but don't ask him to do anything.
Yeah, well,
you know, with scoring the ball. And obviously it's different because he has, you know, I think he has a better, you know, court vision and sense of the game and things along those lines. But, you know, I don't, especially with the way the league's trending, you know, I think it would be, you know, not the best, you know, allocation of resources to take him with a top three pick.
Yeah.
Though we've, you know, the Sixers have been blessed to have two top three picks in as many years, you know, those type of picks don't come around all the time for teams. You know, even if they're bad for a long time, they might get, you know, unlucky in a lottery, or they get the number two pick and it's a bad draft, like it would happen with Evan Turner. Like, this is, you know, especially with all the injury news we've had about Embiid, this is a big player, you know, that could change the course of the franchise. And, you know, it's different to gamble on athleticism and lack of shooting skill, you know, later in the lottery, like they did with MCW, or, you know, with second rounders, like they did with KJ and Jeremy. And I think both of those worked out fairly well. And MCW worked out, you know, well enough that he was able to put up some counting stats, and they were flipping for a really nice pick next year, hopefully. But that's not really the risk I want to take there. I'd rather, you know, take the risk that, you know, D'Angelo, you know, gets a little bit stronger, that Hezonja develops a better dribble, that Porzingis gets a little bit stronger.
Yeah.
Though shooting is correctable and something I think Brett Brown sort of prides himself on from a developmental perspective, it's not, you know, the risk I want to be taking. And maybe I'm just a little bit more gun-shy because we've dealt with MCW recently. It's just, you know, something. Maybe if, you know, if they were to take Hezonja there or Porzingis, and then they were to, you know, sneak back into the top 10 and grab him around 6, 7, or 8, that's perfectly fine with me. But I just don't want him to, you know, be the main guy.
Yeah.
And shoulder that responsibility.
Yeah. For me, it's like, I don't like the, I don't even like talking about him and MCW in the same sentence. And I know you
can compare it's a little cliche.
Because I think MCW had a reputation for a bad shooter. And I think Moutier just, you know, needs work with the shot. I think in the same way.
He's not necessarily a non-shooter. He's
in the same way. I don't think he's a non-shooter in the sense that people will just, like, leave him wide open. I think in the same way, you know, John Wall and Westbrook and Rose were non-shooters and or whatever, and were struggle with their shot. And they, I mean, they're still not great shooters, none of those guys. But I don't think any of them are league average from three yet. But they're not known as bad shooters. And the other thing is, the other thing that's overstated about Moutier is his athleticism. He's not on the level of athleticism as John Wall, Westbrook, and Rose, and that does give me pause. I do think what he has that makes up for. I think he's a very above average athlete, and I think also what adds to it is his strength. I mean, you look at his body; he's extremely NBA ready. Not so much I care about, you know, how ready he is, but that he's already has a body and he can even build on it more. And you watch tape and you see him finishing through contact, and his ability to finish at the rim is really, really strong. And you want a guy to get to the rim, and that's why the free throw shooting gives me pause, because if they, you know, they'll have no problem just smacking them. But if he can continue to get there and make a difference there, and his creative passing and the way he can run a pick and roll and kick it out to wing players, open for threes, and he's fantastic in transition, and he projects as a plus defender. I really, really like his
definitely,
game.
Definitely
the shooting, but if you're paying attention to trends in the NBA, in the same way that we don't want Okafor because of his lack of rim protection and free throw shooting, a point guard who can't shoot should also give you pause. And it's a shame because you don't want to see the trend that we've been seeing when these guys come in and they eventually develop a shot. I'll be kind of upset if we passed on that. But at the same time, I do think there is more upside with Russell to be a game-changing guy, while I think Moutier's floor is higher. Where I think Moutier, there's no way this guy fails. He's gonna have that athleticism, that strength. But I could see Russell flaming out pretty quickly if he can't get that shot up in time and he's can't finish at the rim. But like you said, I think Moutier would be a great trade-up target because it looks like he's sliding to maybe, you know, if the Kings want to go the Carlos Stein route to seven.
Number seven.
Yeah. And the Nuggets might want to trade that pick.
Yeah, if they want to get
the I don't know if they will going. If Moutier's there still, but it seems
it's
like
a three-team deal.
Yeah.
But I was saying, you know, if you look at Rose and Westbrook and Wall and you think they're not that great of shooters and they still have a lot of success, you know, in the current NBA, and you look at those guys as, you know, the 99th percentile of athletes in the NBA.
Yes.
If Moutier is only, you know, and this is just a number I'm throwing out there, 94, 95, 96 percentile, are those few percentage points what, you know, makes them that great? Like, is that just the extra edge they need that allows them to be great despite their, you know, deficiencies shooting the ball? I think it kind of is that, like, that just extra step, that extra second that they're blowing by someone is the difference that allows them to, you know, to be, you know, to be John Wall instead of Drew Holiday, to be Russell Westbrook instead of Michael Carter Williams. It's that little difference. And I'm not sure, you know, I could be wrong because we just haven't seen Moutier enough, despite, you know, a lot of people following him since his, you know, high school career and a lot of, you know, the game film we've seen from a lot of his tournaments and, you know, that type of play in 2013 and 2014. I just don't want to, I think that's not the one, that's not the risk I want to go out on. Obviously all these guys have, you know, pretty, you know, glaring risks outside of Towns, I think, but that's not the one I want to bet on, or I would like the Sixers to bet on, I should say.
Yeah. It's crazy because, you know, a lot of people, we all think like, a lot of the smartest fans, I think, understand the value going best player available. And last year there were some people, you know, really, really wanted to trade up for Wiggins. And they're asking for pretty insane packages after the Embiid injury, because then it looked like 1-2 and then there was a drop off. But this year, it feels like we're in that tier where the Timberwolves would maybe say, maybe we do want Russell. I think that would be dumb, because I think Karl Towns is about as lucky you can be. I think he's like the perfect player, just coming at the perfect time.
What would you give up for Towns?
I would want to trade up for Towns.
What would you give up for him?
I think I'd probably give up any of the picks, any of our picks next year besides our own.
You're gonna do Lakers pick, Heat pick, and Dario, and three obviously.
Whoa, bro. Let's keep Dario out of this.
Well, I'm the Dario guy too, and I'm saying it. I'm just starting out there. I'm like, you're starting high just because I want to see. If I take out Dario, you're going to do that?
Because at the same time, don't you think Lakers pick Dario and three? And do you say he picked two? I feel like that can actually just get us a superstar.
Yeah, like, I'd rather sort of throw that towards, you know, just throwing a name out there, Russell Westbrook or someone.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know who the next guy's going to be. It just seems, you know.
Yeah.
Because of Billy Donovan coming in, there are some clashes. What Kevin Durant's doing, that might be a possible guy.
Yeah, but yeah. So Towns is not like trading up for Towns. I'm not ruling that out at all. I think that would be awesome. I would be so happy. But I'm fine with three. I'm fine with Russell. I'll be very excited.
Yeah, there aren't too many ways, I think,
that he can screw
this should
up.
Be upset on Thursday. Yeah, that the team. I don't.
We're getting a good player. We are getting a good player on Thursday.
Unless they kick the can down the road again.
Yeah. Yeah, worst case scenario, we pick Kristaps, who I love, but and then he says he stays in Spain for a year. Yeah, that's worst case scenario.
I'd be upset, and I think that would be a mistake if that happened.
Yeah, that would be bad. Another thing is, what are your plans for Thursday? We're coming towards the end here, but what are your plans for Thursday?
I don't know. I'm sort of, you know, torn by what I want to do, because the last few years I've just, you know, sort of sat at home on the computer like a dork and just was, you know, completely zoning in the Twitter and like just watching TV. And I kind of like that, just because it's almost like when I'm at school and I'm watching Eagles games, I don't like watching them with just like casual Eagles fans. I need to either be at the stadium watching them or by myself or with like maybe two or three close friends. I can't watch them with just random people or I'll, just because I'm freaking out and doing stuff. And I think Sixers draft had this similar vibes for me. Like, if I'm sitting there at three and they take Kristaps and I'm at a bar somewhere and everyone's screaming, I'm just on my phone like, screw all these people, I'm going home and going on fucking Twitter. Like, I'll be like that. And
that was last year.
I just might pick up a nice six-pack from Acme or something and just relax.
Oh, of Not Your Father's Root Beer. Yeah.
Possibly. Well, that's like pretty heavy. I don't want to be like by the end of the lottery just be smashed and passed out or anything.
Yeah, last year I had a party at my apartment and it was bad. It was like the Dario pick happened and then like everyone started yelling at me. As if like it's
your fault.
As if it's my fault.
You're like
and I was the only one happy about the pick. So because I was in there after we took Peyton and it said it was on the move. I was like Dario. And then it happened. I was either saying Dario or Stauskas. Hey, thank God. But thank God it went the way it did. But then I was elated and everyone's screaming at me. I just like went in my room and just went on Twitter and I was like, I don't think I can do this again.
See, but at the same time, backfired.
Yeah, but at the same time, I might do it again. I feel like I'm gonna wake up Thursday early, or I might just not go to sleep until Thursday, as I talked about earlier. But I'm gonna wake up early Thursday, just start grilling. I'm picturing myself drinking 9 a.m. just grilling, like no one will even be there. I'm just gonna grill like hundreds of dogs and burgers and just like be throwing them behind me to nothing, just like a mindless task to keep me busy, keep me from going insane on Thursday until the draft starts, and then I'll be ready to go, and I'll probably have people over again.
You have to look at it from the Kelvin Pelton perspective. What percent chance is it that this is a superstar party? Which percent chance is this a starter party? And which percent chance is this a bus party?
Well, I would say it's probably similar to the D'Angelo Russell. I'd say 15% this party is a superstar party. We take Russell and we get back in the top 10 and everyone's going nuts. They're hoisting me in the air. Everyone's, praising me for some reason
And they got your KJ McDaniels cut out and they're prancing.
Yeah, my KJ cut out. We somehow trade for CJ McCollum. That's just a draft night pipe dream. And then 40% probably bust. We either just take Russell and nothing else really happens, or we take Kristaps or someone else that would piss people off. And then there's a fucking Capelli pinata in the house that everyone's hitting, and then I just leave my house.
Yeah, I think my loner party, there's like 85% chance of like starter quality, and then like 12% chance of superstar party, just because something crazy happens. They trade for a superstar, and then 3% chance bust. I don't know.
Yeah, it can't really go bad. Yeah, that's like if you die.
23%.
Yeah, that three. That's like if you actually just like die during the draft, which would be bad.
Or the cable goes out, or my phone breaks.
Oh yeah, I didn't think of those options. Twitter might break. Twitter might break.
The dog knocks out the router.
Yeah, I'd say I'd say there's still a large, like, so 40 and 15 were the percents I gave. I'd still say there's a large, like, another 45% portion. I'm just, like, chilling as a starter.
Just a casual party.
A Channing Frye type. Just, like, a very average party. And just because, I'll probably have a primo tray. And how bad could it be? Shout out Aunt Gargano. How bad could the party be with the primo tray?
Yeah, now I'm wondering what I should do for food. I'm actually not going to get a primo tray for myself. But I don't know. A couple of my friends asked me to go out, and I was just like, I don't know. I don't want to be weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't want to be like, oh, do you want to go to a bar? Yeah, I'm going to sit in there, and it's just leave me alone. I'm on my phone.
Yeah, no, I couldn't be in a bar. I would have to be at...
I'm the one in the wrong. I know that.
Yeah. Well,
Dilworth Park. That's the biggest gamble ever, because if they get Russell, everyone's just partying. There's free beer. Everyone's getting smashed. It's a great time. Or they take Porzingis and just boom, like the love statue is on fire now. Things are going horrible.
Someone would get stabbed.
Max Rappaport is hooking the hose up to the fire hydrant and extinguishing the flames.
I would be Frozone from I don't even really watch cartoons or whatever, but the dude from the Incredibles who shoots ice out of his hands. I'd just be flying around the city.
That
just
should be
freezing.
A bigger Twitter thing.
Yeah. that would be me. It would be insane. Like the sick fuck in me wants that to happen, but The regular me, I really just I would love to see Russell in the Sixers hat on Thursday, and I think that about wraps up our pod right here, wraps up the boxer pod.
Yeah, the late night pod.
Yeah, I'm probably ready to go to sleep.
Yeah, I have to get up in like 5-6 hours.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think the staying up until Thursday thing's happening. I might stay up tomorrow
at work.
I might stay up tomorrow
night. Yeah, I'll probably stay up late and just get up early on. I don't think I have the – or you stay up all night and then you take a nap. I'm a big nap guy between like 2 and 4.
Yeah, I don't nap. Don't nap. Don't like the art form of napping.
I'm like Kramer / Da Vinci. You just take a nap every 45 minutes.
If you live to 80, it's the equivalent of living to 145 years.
Oh my god.
If you did do the Da Vinci sleeping. Yeah, he did say that.
Okay. I don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Sam Hinkie. He does that.
Oh wait, I think we talked about this before real quick, just for like a minute or two. Kramer is definitely anti-tanking, right?
Yeah, no, Kramer would not. George Costanza is so pro tank. He will tank for eight seasons.
George really isn't pro tanking, but his dad, Frank Costanza, is anti tanking, and George becomes pro tanking as a result.
Yeah, George.
Oh, Jerry, you're kicking the can down the road again. What are you going to do next year, Jerry? George, that's exactly what's going to happen.
George would. Like what Simmons thinks Hinkie's doing of trying to just keep picking players who won't play to like prolong his job security. That's what Costanza would actually do if he was a GM.
That's actually a really good comp for like
Jerry. I can't ever get fired.
That's worst case scenario. Hinkie is George Costanza.
Yeah, and like
and then Elaine comes in a room. What happened in the draft? They took Chris Daps-Porzingis. Get out! And then she just throws Jerry into the other room.
Yeah, then Hinkie trades down to 6 with the Bob Sacramento Kings.
And you know, who's Kramer's team then, you think? The Hawks?
I would say, well, I keep connecting him to Bob Sacramento, so I'm thinking of the Kings, but I don't think he would actually
style
of play. Yeah, no, he would 100% be against Vivek. Until Vivek like pays him a lot to wear Google Glass on his promotional tour.
He takes them on the real Vivek tour. He's the real Vivek.
Yeah, maybe the Mavericks.
Maybe he's a big Cuban guy.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
If we're getting into Seinfeld 2000 territory, Kramer would definitely be a huge Shark Tank fan, and he would try to get on the show.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like Kramer and Newman would be on Shark Tank, and then part of the deal is they're one of those people who ask for Mav season tickets as part of the contribution, and then that's how it would happen.
And then George would have the new uniforms.
Should we do a pod? Should we do a pod one day of just all? Yeah, Hinkie Seinfeld.
I'll watch a few hours of show beforehand, and we'll just do that because we need to wrap this up.
Yeah, I need to really dive deep into my Seinfeld bag before we do this.
Yeah.
But all right, buddy. I'll talk to you. Yeah, after the draft, we'll run this back.
All right.
All right. See you, man.
See ya.